So save the date, put it on your calendar, September 10th. This upcoming fall, I am scheduled for surgery. Hopefully I can get an earlier date, but I've been to Boston a few times now to get tests done there, balance tests, and to see a couple surgeons, one a neurosurgeon and one a neuro-otologist. And these two surgeons are the two people on the surgical team that would be doing this operation, because the operation that I have requires both of them, because it is pretty close to the brain, where my tumor is. And I don't really fully understand the division of labor between the two, but that's pretty common. It's about an 8-hour surgery, roughly. Kind of can go either way, a little longer, a little shorter. You know, where essentially the tumor that I have is completely filling the little channel through the bone, through the skull, between my inner ear and my brainstem. And my tumor has completely filled that little space up. It's about 2 millimeters from my brain at this point, which, you know, to most of us, we're like, holy cow, that's so close. But to, like, neurosurgeons, like, that's kind of a fair amount of space. So it's always interesting to see the perspectives. So I'm slated for another round of different types of vestibular testing down in Boston, another MRI, a CAT scan. And one of the things that's interesting is, like, you know, this whole process has been interesting in terms of, like, a lot of the doctors I've seen have not really given so much recommendations, but more just like, here are the facts, here's the information, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I'm not the doctor. Like, what should I do? What, based on me and what you see and kind of my life and all the factors that kind of make me who I am, and now that I have this thing, what would be your recommendation? I can always choose to not do it. And I finally, with the last visit to Boston, finally talking to the neuroaudiologist, felt like I kind of had, you know, a doctor who was like, yeah, here's some recommendations. I asked him, well, I need to get something done at some point in my life with this tumor. And he said, yes, at some point in your life, you're going to have to get something done. You're not the best candidate to just ride it out to the end of your life because you're so young. He's like, you can do that if you want, and we just monitor it. But for all the reasons why surgery might be good for you, doing it sooner rather than later is one of the big reasons. You know, it's as small as it's going to get. You know, you're relatively young and fit. It probably will stabilize your disequilibrium a bit post-operation. So one of the things that the balance tests I have taken shows that I have about 78% deficiency in my balance center on the right side of my head. So no kind of surprise there. So how people describe it is I'm getting partial or faulty signals from the right side of my head, and that's confusing my brain. And my brain's trying to figure it out. So ultimately, you know, over time, it does kind of figure things out as you shift to using more of your left side of your head. You know, and there's other pieces of balance, like your tactile sense of touching things and getting their response and feedback from your world around you. There's a lot of visual pieces to this. But one of the thoughts is that if you have the surgery, they're going to cut that nerve, that vestibular nerve, and it kind of resets your balance to zero on that side, and then your brain can fully just focus on the signals it's getting from the other side. And the reason why I'm getting more vestibular testing, a different type of vestibular testing, kind of a different mechanism, is just to make sure that the vestibular system that is functioning on my left side is functioning at a normal capacity. Because if I had a deficiency on my left side, they might choose not to do the surgery to try to preserve as much balance processing between the two sides, is how it was explained to me. And it's actually very interesting. You know, if you want to put some wings on this thing, on the zebra corn, my particular symptoms, this specifically the balance piece, is actually pretty uncommon, is what they're telling me. It's like most people have the hearing loss to some degree, you know, either partial or full hearing loss like I have. But even though this tumor actually grows on the sheath of the vestibular nerve, that particular nerve, and then therefore as it gets bigger, it impinges on the other nerves. And they're not 100% sure how it actually damages the other nerves. There's a few different mechanisms. It is kind of amazing how much they don't know. But they said that even though this thing does grow on the vestibular nerve, having the significant balance challenges I'm having is actually pretty uncommon. So there you go. A zebra corn Pegasus. We put a zebra with a unicorn horn and wings on it, if you really want to go that far. So it's just been kind of interesting how, you know, everybody's different, and then I just keep funneling into a slightly more obscure subset of an obscure subset. So, but whatever, it is what it is. But yeah, I went to Boston, and it was like last Thursday, balance test, saw this other surgeon, and then Friday I committed to the surgery. I don't really see any reason not to do it at this point. I think I have enough information. You know, there's always time to back out if I have a change of heart, or there's more data coming in from the CAT scans and MRIs and this new balance test I'm going to take at the end of the month. So, but you know, it's kind of a real deal. It's, you know, they're going to, you know, crack open my skull essentially to get into this thing. It's like I said, it's an all day operation. It's kind of delicate. And they're really going to try to, their main goal is to try to preserve the facial nerve that runs through that channel, so that way I don't lose control over half my face. And then I believe there is also a nerve that kind of goes into your throat. So the cool thing is that because this is a benign tumor, is that there's no real impetus to have to remove every piece of the tumor. So if they actually find a piece of the tumor that's too hard to remove or too risky to remove that's near my facial nerve, they'll actually leave it and just kind of get the rest out, because to them right now, preserving the facial nerve is a priority. It's not like we have to get it all out, because if we don't, you're going to die. So once again, I have this interesting, very life-changing kind of significant thing happening to me without the stress of it being life-threatening, right? I mean, I'm probably going to just live my life, you know, as long as Lux is with me, you know, until I'm, you know, significantly older and go from there. So, yeah, very, very interesting thing going on. So that's my update. So I have kind of a few months kind of waiting to get this operation, and I'm excited to get it done. Mostly because I think it's the right choice. The decision felt very natural. There's no stress in it for me. I'm just like, that's the decision. Let's do this. And the sooner I get it done, the sooner I can push the restart button and start recovery and then focus on the rest of my life. So, but you know, when you have to schedule two top tier doctors, to spend a whole day in one place together, scheduling becomes a little bit challenging. And I do feel really fortunate, because, you know, I'm going down to the specialists in Boston, and, you know, literally Mass Eye and Ear, and these doctors are kind of the best in the world at this thing, or at least one of the best places and top doctors to go get this diagnosed and treated. And I was talking to the doctors, and I really appreciated this. I said, you know, it's kind of an 8-hour surgery. It's kind of a big deal. And the neuroaudiologist who I saw last Thursday is like, what you have is rare, but it's not rare for us. He's like, we literally do this surgery all the time. And it just made me think of guiding. Like, if you think about guiding, like, most people would look at what we do and be like, that is ridiculous, you know, but that's our normal, right? We just have a different baseline normal, which was fascinating. And once again, it's been really interesting seeing the parallels between guiding and the process I'm going through now. Because once again, I think everything's the same. Once you kind of look at it kind of critically and from a high enough viewpoint, you're like, oh, this is all kind of the same stuff. But one thing that I've always been kind of interested in, and I use the term micro relationships. You know, think about relationships you have with somebody that are very short term. We're talking about like seconds of transaction time between you and a stranger, up to maybe, you know, a few hours or even a day, like a really short period of time. So we're not talking about, you know, building a relationship over days, weeks, months, years, right? I mean, micro relationships can transition into longer term relationships. But as guides, right, we deal with oftentimes micro relationships. You know, where I work in the summer, we do a lot of half day programming. You know, so I might do 2 half days where I literally will meet somebody or a group of people and be with them for roughly 4 hours and that's it. And we're about to go do something not typical for most people. We're going to go into, you know, vertical environment and do some technical climbing, right? And I think it's really interesting is like in a micro relationship, you have very little time to assess somebody and kind of give the thumbs up or thumbs down and move forward, right? And I'm still amazed, like as much as we think the world is going to hell, and it is in a lot of ways, the world still really works on trust. Like so much of the transactions we have with people that we see and people that we don't even ever meet that who are just, you know, providing services or building the products that we use is relying on trust. And my uncle Tom, who's a doctor, ears, nose, and throat doctor, who's been helping me out a lot with this, he cited some study and what was the length of time the average person took to assess their doctor on their first visit in terms of thumbs up or thumbs down. And I was like, I'm sure it's really short. I mean, like almost instantaneously. And it was 18 seconds, right? 18 seconds for the average person to make an opinion about their provider, you know. And it's true. Like I've always said this to the new and younger guides working in Acadia. I said, you know, your presence is important. So the when the clients meet you, if this is their first interaction with you, like you're not, you know, calling them or whatever, like you want to present yourself in a way that builds their confidence immediately. Like if they show up and there's a room full of guides, you want them to like scan the room and go, I want to climb with that guide, right? You know, so that micro relationship and that trust is crazy. Like I'm thinking about this doctor I saw last week. Like I literally had about 20-minute office visit with him and I committed to surgery the next day. Like I might see him, you know, maybe 40 minutes total between this visit and when I actually go through surgery, right? Like I might not even see him a whole hour, right? Yeah, I'm trusting him to perform this, you know, somewhat major surgery to my head, you know? That's kind of crazy. And it really makes me feel like, you know, being in the kind of patient slash client role, I'm really, once again, you know, understanding some of these processes and observing these processes through the client side of things. And now that and certainly because I've thought about these things for such a long time and how I present myself and how I do things and how I've taught things around all these things from the provider side, it's really interesting to have the observational and objective skills to kind of like go, oh yeah, I can see how it is now from the client side. It's always good to be in a client position. Like you should always try to go out at some point in your life and learn something new, to just, you know, experience something else where you have to trust somebody else with something you don't really know how it works or whatever, just to get that perspective and be reminded what it feels like for a lot of our clients showing up and meeting us and then going out and to do something in the mountains, right? Wildly fascinating, right? I mean, think about it, most of the time, if I'm going to do something more significant with a person, I'm going to build a longer term relationship with them. I'm going to spend more time with them, right? So we can go do this thing. Like the interesting thing with the medical systems, like I don't have that time. I don't have that luxury, right? You know, there's just, it's just not available. It's like you get what you get. You might be able to go see another doctor, you know, but then there's a certain like time piece where you're like, all right, that's it. That's all I get. We need to make a decision about something that might be pretty critical, and we go for it, right? Wild, totally wild. But the I always thought the concept of micro relationships was pretty interesting. You know, whether it is like you're making a transaction with someone who's just, you bought some food from somebody, right? Like a street vendor, think about like a food truck, like that's a pretty small transaction time, right? Yet you're completely trusting this person to give you food that's not going to harm you, that's going to be good, you know, that's made well, you know, whatever the factors are. And you're like, all right, boom, gone. Like this whole relationship of me and this person might last a couple minutes at most, maybe even less, depending on what you're buying, right? I mean, that's kind of wild. So it's amazing how much, and this goes back to that reading people thing, how much we both consciously and unconsciously are evaluating every situation. But if we're talking about people, the person in front of us and our expectations and our thoughts and all the things going into giving a thumbs up or thumbs down. It's been kind of wild, you know, having met so many clients in my life, you know, who are new to climbing. You know, they're just, maybe they're climbing, you know, a bit, or maybe they're not climbing it, you know, they're not climbers at all, and they're just kind of doing it for just the afternoon or whatever. And like, before we even leave the shop, you know, so we're talking about 15 minutes, 20 minutes of time with these people to get ready, you know, they're just been like, we're not going with anybody else. We're only going to go with you. I'm like, oh, that's nice. I had this this client that I, who is a climber, and we did a couple of days of climbing and climbed a big alpine route, and they contacted me wanting to do another one, and I kind of told them my situation, and I said, well, I could set you up with another guide, you know, to do what you'd like to do, and they're like, I only want to climb with you. And I was like, well, that's very generous. I'm like, there are other good guides out there for sure, but it was just interesting to, like, the rapport that you build with somebody, how they can assess you by the cues that you're giving them to make, you know, kind of a statement like that. Yeah, I think it's important that how you present yourself to a new client or even to an existing client and or present yourself to the world, if you will, to kind of build that trust, you know, especially in a profession like guiding where trust is so important. I need people to trust me, right? And I'm building that trust as soon as I can. So that way, when it comes critical that they perform a task that I need them to perform in an environment like a cliff or a snow, you know, slope, you know, that we're skiing, that they'll do it and they'll trust me. I'm like, I need you to do this right now, and they'll do it, right? Super huge. And the other piece that's been also interesting that kind of ties into this is not only the direct communication that I have had with the doctors, for example, or the healthcare providers, but like actually, you know, once again, just the peripheral contact I have with all like the administrative assistants and people who are scheduling and stuff. And that makes a big deal. So, you know, if you have a great product, you're an awesome guide, but you work for an unorganized company and everybody's having a hard time making the booking or everything's getting messed up. And by the time they get to you, they're already kind of disgruntled, but then they have an amazing time with you. Like that service isn't fully in harmony, right? I've been actually having really positive experiences with the Mass General and Mass Eye and Ear administrative assistants through the portal, you know, that I get to access my tests and contact the doctor's offices. They've been great. And that goes a long way into building the whole, you know, sphere of trust around the surgeon that I've just committed to or the two surgeons I've just committed to. You know, if I would have had a significantly more frustrating time, I mean, I'd probably still have to do the commitment because I kind of need the surgery. But I would have a much different experience and feeling about the whole process, right? And the institution, you know, whether that is warranted or not, you know, you have these experiences. So all the peripheral people and interactions, whether it's an interaction with you and you're just like contacting a client before a date, right? Or they're contacting somebody in your organization. Like, those all matter in this micro transactional experience that we have with people, right? I find that super fascinating. I'm sure it's in a book somewhere. I'm sure someone's studied this or written about it. So what you do and what you say and how you look matters. And I've always told this to the young guides, like, I don't need you or want you to not be who you are. That's important. It's important for you to be who you are. But you need to be who you are and look how you want to look, right? But you also need to be professional, and you need to find a way to be professional with who you are and how you look, you know? So, just kind of an interesting thing, but that's my update right now, for going forward. Still really can't drive a whole lot. I'm actually going to drive to Acadia today, which is about an hour drive. It's kind of the longest drive I've done by myself. My dog Nigel and I are going to go for a walk. Still really can't work. The disequilibrium is enough. Where, you know, being in charge of people's lives and my own life in a mountain environment is still not on the plate for me. But moving forward, trying to figure out the future, and overall, still super psyched. I'm actually, like, very excited about the surgery, in the sense of, like, this is completely unknown to me and kind of a very novel new adventure. And I was just contacting my Uncle Tom's, like, do they record these? Do they make video of these? Because I would actually love to watch the surgery, because how often do you get to watch somebody crack into your skull, right? Not very often. So I'm very curious about the whole process, and I've had all kinds of, like, curious tests and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, what does this do? What do you see? Definitely still on the bus, can't get off it. So I am trying to enjoy the ride as much as possible.